Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're starting off the new year with lots of health and healing insights and information. I'm on a phone, hopefully a little later on in the program. It'll be switched over to a studio microphone. Traveling, we're going to talk about gum disease and why gum disease is so problematic for other conditions you may not even be aware are associated. I'm also going to share some natural protocols to help you if you want to improve your insulin. If you're pre-diabetic or diabetic, if you're overweight, I'm going to give you some foods that can make a difference. These are functional foods, meaning they function in a way to help your body heal. Also today, we're going to take a look at natural healing and what happens when the body is put into a position to believe that nothing can be done. I don't think most people are aware of how positive a thought is upon the healing process and how destructive a negative thought is when it comes to diseasing, meaning when you're told nothing can be done, your whole body begins to believe that because you believe it. And then you work against yourself. So we're going to talk with a person, if he's able to get on, who had a medically irreversible condition. Two separate teams of neurologists were working with him, advanced, end-stage multiple sclerosis. Not asymptomatic, not where he was otherwise looked and act normal. No, he was barely able to walk. And today, different story. We'll look at his journey. Also, today, I'm going to play some audio clips, and then we're going to have you have an opportunity to call in. And I don't know if I'll be able to hear your call or not. We do have our system, brand new system in place. But I'm going to hit on a lot of different themes and themes that I believe that we should be paying attention to starting into the new year. So I'm going to get into that. For example, one of the darlings of the left is Rachel Maddow. In fact, MSNBC is a virtual propagandist forum for, you know, the corporate Democrats. So Abby Martins asked a simple question. Does she believe that Rachel Maddow is dangerous to journalism? We'll hear what Abby has to say. You could agree or disagree in part or whole. We're also going to hear from Professor Peter Kozinek about three false myths that Americans believe in. This is really good material that he's sharing with us. Also, I am not one of those people who buys into the economic utopia that everything should be euphoric. Look at Wall Street and look at the equity market, look at the bond market, look at the housing price going back up. Yeah, all bubbles. All bubbles just like before 2007, with far more devastating impact when they all start to break, as they will. And we're going to hear from David Stockman. And he was fired for being too honest with Ronald Reagan about the economy. And he is going to talk for a few minutes about what we're heading into, quote, is an absolute financial bloodbath. Okay, that's his point of view. What's he backing it up with? And you hear in these congressional hearings, the senators browbeat the panelists, and they go, yes, sir, no, sir, I don't have that information. We'll have to get back to you. I'm not sure I can tell you that. That's classified. It's not our intent, etc. It's all meaningless. And then along comes someone who just nails it and is not afraid to go head-to-head with these legislators. So we're going to have that person who's going to go head-to-head in a congressional hearing, and they all gang up on him. And he more than holds his own. You're going to hear a Michael Shearer tell Congress some of the problems that we've gotten ourselves into, they're to blame. But You'll have to hear the context. And if we have time, I don't know that we will, I was sitting in an airport ready to go on a trip to finish off a new film, not the film I just premiered. That's worldwide premiere, will be in the middle of the month. I'll talk about that later in the week. But another one, I've been working on two simultaneously. And a fellow comes over and he says, do you remember me? And my name's Jimmy. And I looked at him and said, I'm sorry, Jimmy, I don't. He said, I was one of about 130 more or less people that showed up 25 years ago for a retreat down in Texas at your Healing Springs Ranch. And I was already a vegan. I had run two marathons. I was a meditator. I wasn't stressed. And I enjoyed the lectures, and I enjoyed the food. The environment was spectacular, but what I really enjoyed, what stuck with me most, was watching your brother Howard walk into these large pastures with these animals that had been rescued, and how he handled them. And I never understood. And when I asked him, when he came out of one of these big pastures where they were all these impalas, and those are very dangerous animals. Even a lion is cautious because Pala gets down on its knees, and then it just engorges these long 3 or 4 foot horns right into the belly of anything that attacks us. Your brother is out there walking around petting them, and I'm thinking, are these tame? No. They just arrived that week before from an animal preserve where they killed them for sport, and the place went bankrupt, and so you were able to rehabilitate them over time, but this is only a week. Never could figure this out. That's always stumped me. Okay. So if we have time today, I'm going to add to that stumping. But you'll have more information. Because if anyone ever asked my brother Howard, was he an animal whisperer? The answer was yes. He could do what this woman does. But he never explained it. He would just smile. This woman did something that a psychologist who was called her in, and she knew nothing about what she was faced with when she came. She had no idea. The owner and his wife of an animal preserve in South Africa had a black leopard that would not exit its little cave, go into the pasture with all the other animals. It would bite, it would kill, and would growl. So what happened? We're going to play an audio clip so you can hear it, and I'll describe what it is if we have time. So we have an awful lot to share today. So we'll start first with health and nutrition, as we always do. And from Gothenburg University in Sweden, they did a study about your bacteria in foods or fiber and healthy fibers. You know, from fruits and vegetables, the skins mainly. And they found that if you're concerned about your health, you really should pay attention to the idea of the healthier the fiber you take in. And what they found was by maintaining a good blood glucose level and sensitivity to insulin, that means you're not having your blood sugar go up and down. And then what you introduce good bacteria. And they're saying you can get a lot of this good bacteria by the quality of the fibers in your diet. And this particular scientist, professor of molecular medicine, studies the role of gut bacteria in metabolic disorders. Now, from this program, you know that you should have at least 12 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, and legumes and whole grain products. All this is important because this is not a part of the high-fat, high-carbohydrate diet associated with inflammatory bowel disease and weight gain and diabetes and heart disease. In fact, a plant-based diet with all the different nutrients coming in, apples and blueberries and pomegranate, sprouts, all this is really good to keep your weight down and the mucosal lining of your intestines, stomach, healthy. That's what his stomach showed. the study showed that if you're eating this way, you're getting the right gut microbiota, and that is talking to your body's cells, and that is helping you maintain good blood sugar, good intestinal health, and turning off inflammation. Now, there's probably 1,000 studies right now on this very similar topic. It's one of the hottest areas of research in the world is good bacteria. So one more reason why when you eat sugar or bagels or donuts or muffins or ice cream, or you eat the really rancid and putrefying foods like meats, and especially ultra-processed meats like salami and bologna, that you're feeding bad gut bacteria, and that's not good. Good bacteria, healthy body; bad bacteria, sick body. Also, stomach cancer risk drops 26% by simply eating the right vegetables. This is from the Shahid University of Medical Sciences. Now, we know right now in the United States that over 95,000 Americans currently have stomach cancer. It's the third leading cause of cancer deaths, and it's increasing. But there's a solution, and here's the good news. Conventional wisdom has held that carrots can help maintain sharp eyesight. That's true, and it's been verified by modern science. But now it appears that carrots offer another important health benefit. The current research shows that this wonderful root vegetable may also hold the key to preventing stomach cancer. And in a scientific review published in the Journal of Gastric Cancer, a major peer-reviewed journal, the authors looked at 81 separate scientific studies from around the world, and they combined the results and found that carrot consumption decreased stomach cancer risk by an average of 26%. Wow. Interestingly, even modest amounts of carrots afforded major health benefits. How little? A fifth of a cup. Now, a cup is small to begin with. And take one-fifth of that of chopped fresh garlics per day. And others have suggested as little as 3 carrots a week to get good results. And the most impressive results came from Lithuania, in which roughly 1,100 participants ate 1 to 6 carrots a week, and the results were a dramatic 47% decrease in the occurrence of stomach cancer. Again, if these results were from a pharmaceutical drug, it would be reported on every mainstream media outlet. Everybody would want it. The researchers noted a clear link between diet and stomach cancer, reporting that diets high in red and processed meats, what I just mentioned, salami, pastrami, on pizzas, bologna, and salt and alcohol increase the risk. Well, let's see. How likely is it that someone having meat would also have a lot of salt on the meat? Yeah. And how often do they have alcohol with a meal? A beer, wine? Almost always. So that's one of the reasons that we have so many people dying of stomach cancer. On the other hand, consuming green tea, fresh fruits, and vegetables have been shown to protect against stomach cancer. And prostate cancer, which is the third leading cause of death in adult males, currently affects 160,000 men in the United States. Well, there's a meta-analysis published in the European Journal of Nutrition. They found that eating carrots reduced the risk of prostate cancer by 18%. And the scientists were given the ability to calculate the dose-benefit ratio for carrots and cancer. Here's how it works. For every 10 grams, which is tiny, that's tiny. Give you an idea, how small is it? 20.35 grams to an ounce. You're talking about a little under a third of a teaspoon. That's tiny. And yet it still reduced the risk of prostate cancer by 5%. Wow. Theoretically, the researchers said a single serving of carrots a day could slash the risk of prostate cancer by 64% for all the men in the audience and the women who can still tolerate them and want them to live. One single serving of carrots a day could slash prostate cancer risk by 64%. Now, another way that we can do it, we can juice carrots, like 6 ounces. 6 ounces of carrots is equal to at least 2 pounds of carrots. So that should give you 100% protection. Now, you can put other juice in there. You can also you can shave carrots and put them into a salad. That's nice. So no problem there. But let's protect people from stomach cancer. Let's protect people from prostate cancer. And of course, there's xanthan and lutein, a pair of important antioxidant phytonutrients, along with caffeic acid and ferulic acid and cormeric acid. These are all chemicals inside the carrot, and they're all important for you. So let's do what we can. And by the way, although much of the research has focused on chopped raw carrots, carrot juice, as I just mentioned, has also shown a potential for preventing cancer. In one study, researchers found that carrot juice caused programmed cell death, meaning the cancer cell self-destructed. It was human leukemia cells. Another study, women who consumed 8 ounces a day of carrot juice, what I just recommended, for 3 months, experienced a lower risk of return of breast cancer. And according to Stanford Healthcare, a single cup of carrot juice, that's a cup, not a glass, contains amounts of nutrients and phytochemicals equivalent to 5 cups of chopped carrots. So, also important. So, those are all good things, saving lives, preventing prostate cancer, breast cancer, stomach cancer. That's all good. Now, from Umeå University in Sweden, I just found that I read a lot of studies, and this one triggered a response. This was published in the European Biomedicine Journal. Researchers have linked genetic changes in the so-called CRH gene, which affects the regulation of the body's stress systems, to suicide risk and psychiatric illness. The study of epigenetic changes in the body's hormone-based stress system has shown that stress-related changes in the CRH gene are linked to both serious suicide attempts in adults and psychiatric illness in adolescents. And by the way, this isn't the first. There were previous studies have indicated an overactive stress system in individuals with increased suicide risk. So what does it mean in lay language? Why is this important? It's important because when I was interviewing almost 1,000 homeless GIs, the vast majority were suffering from either Gulf War syndrome or exposure to all the vaccines that were never proven safe, like the botulism vaccine, the anthrax vaccine, plus the contaminants that they say are ubiquitous everywhere in your foreign theaters. The water is always polluted. As one guy said, you're out there, it's 110 degrees, you're in the Iraqi desert, and you're drinking bottled water, and you can taste the chemicals. But there's another factor as well, and that is the always-present idea that in any given second, your next step could be your last, and the person approaching you may have a bomb and detonate it, and you're in a convoy, and suddenly something explodes. So you're always on stress alert, and as a result, when they come home, there's no stopping off for a couple months to rebalance the person emotionally and physically to help them cleanse and detoxify, de-stress. So they go home, and as one guy said, within 2 days of being home, he had already punched holes in 2 walls, and his family didn't want him there. So he left. And he found he couldn't find jobs because there's a bias against people who've served in combat in a lot of places. They don't want to hire you. And so he migrated till he was out of money down to Florida. And then he found there was a whole lot of other people like him, but nothing being done to help them. When I say nothing, I mean nothing, not a single thing. There's a cold spell right now. They'll be out sleeping outside in little tiny pup tents or a sleeping bag, and some not at all, maybe a blanket. And they don't have a meal. They don't have a toilet. They don't have electricity. They don't have water to drink. They have to go and find these, always in inhospitable environments where nobody wants you. They've even got benches now where historically you could sit on a bench. Now you got to put money in, and spikes that are in the seat rescind so you can sit on the bench for whatever period of time that allows you. And then you got to keep feeding money into it, or otherwise the spikes come up and you can't sit on it. And they put spikes everywhere where you can't put down a box or a sleeping bag, or you can't stay, where at least you could be out of the weather somewhat. So if you're saying how wonderful it is in your ads to become a Marine or Air Force, and you're showing how macho it is and really triggering the alpha response, what happens when those people come back and body bags broken and subjected to epigenetic influence on their stress mechanism? Well, we don't care. No president has helped them, not one, and they won't be helped because the people who are presidents are not there to help people. These are people who have no value to them, and that's unfortunate because these are still human beings. As a result, about 22 a day are killing themselves, more often than not just putting a gun in their mouth, blowing their brains out. And the VA is just a completely corrupt and completely inefficient, abysmal environment, doesn't help anybody. So this study that I just gave you here, it shows that when you're in a stressful environment, your cells impact in a negative epigenetic way, and one particular gene, the CRH gene, which affects how you deal with stress, can then put you at a greater risk of suicide or other psychiatric diagnosis. So the solution, from my perspective, is set aside all the vets. That's one category. But just what about all the people who are in home environments, work environments that are highly stressful? And then they start taking medications, and the side effect of the medication is either depression, anxiety, or suicidal ideation. So we need a national de-stress program. Now, I'm sure Big Pharma would love to coordinate that and get everyone on Paxil, Prozac, Effexor, or some other medication. But we need to do it without pharmacology. We need to do it without medicine. Medicine's the problem, not the solution on this. And we need to start de-stressing. Even if we can't do it nationally, we can do it personally. There are different programs that are available where you can learn how to de-stress. There's mindful meditation. There's rebalancing your body by cleansing. In fact, 2 hours of complete silence actually stimulates regrowth in your brain. That's one of the reasons I believe people should be doing retreats in silence. That will make an enormous difference for them. It can help them. So before we would say, well, suck it up and get over it. Yeah. And exactly how's my DNA supposed to deal with that? Because now your DNA has been affected, and if this gene in your particular case has been affected, you're far more likely to think about suicide or try to commit suicide. So we need a national de-stress program. But before we get there, let's start doing it individually, every day. There are multiple sources of de-stressing. They're not expensive. And frequently we need to be around other people who can help us, guide us in our de-stress mechanisms. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall on the road. I want to mention that tonight at 7 p.m., for those of you, and we've had a lot, thousands of you from around the world have been tuning in for the last three Tuesday evenings to PRN.FM or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear the Progressive Commentary Hour, where I've been talking about what's going on with our world, our planet, our oceans and rivers and estuaries, our glaciers and our rainforest, our soil and our food and species, and how's it all manifesting and what can we do about it? And which ones have tipped? We can't do anything about it. They're going to continue on their merry way, and we'd be stupid not to get out of harm's way. So I'm continuing that one-hour commentary. It's based upon 9 years of extensive scholarship and research, over 3,000 hours on just tonight's topic alone. So let's put it another way. To get what you would hear tonight, you would have to read at least 1,000 scientific studies. But I'm putting it all into 1 hour for you. And there's still two more weeks of this to go to get all of it, because there's so much to learn. You're going to learn about things you would not have known, and most importantly, solutions of what to do individually, if not collectively. That's 7 p.m. Progressive Commentary Hour. Before we go to our first audio clip, we're going to go over and say hello to Luann Panessi, who's on the line, and along with Kenny. Hi, Kenny. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. Kenny there?
Kenny, are you there?
Hi, Gary. How are you? Happy New Year.
I'm having trouble hearing you, Kenny. Can you talk a little louder and right into the telephone?
Sure. You know, let me go outside. Perhaps I'll have a better signal.
Okay. I have not spoken with Kenny. I do not know what he's going to say. There's no pre-interview involved, so I'll find out when you find out what Kenny's going to say. And this is also, over the weekend, Luann and I were speaking about the people from the last year who we tried to help, who we know, but didn't want to help themselves. They just didn't want to give up the negative or give up the conditioned or give up the patterns of behavior that they'd gotten so used to. And so the argument becomes everyone needs help at some level, at some point in their life, but are they willing to be a part of that help? Are they going to resist? Are they going to say no? Are they going to give you an excuse? Or, I can't, it's too much time, I don't know. I don't like the taste of that. I have to give up that. I don't want to give up that. You can't imagine the kind of excuses I hear. And, of course, I could play the devil's advocate and say, fine, friend, you win. You're going to die. Now, how painful is death? How painful is it to those who love you and want you still in their life? So you think that giving up a particular item of food is so painful that you'd rather die than give it up? Then what is the real meaning of your life? You get your priorities wrong. All the time we have this story. All the time, you know, and or people create these artificial crisis and dramas. And you know you can't help anyone who is playing King Lear in their own drama. It's not going to happen. You got to get someone who is willing to make every change necessary, no matter what it is. And if a person's not willing to give that commitment, I don't spend my time anymore because I know it's a wasted time. I know they're not going to do it. They'll find 10 excuses why they can't do anything. And yet when it really hits rock bottom, and Luann, is this not the case? One person in particular, they were on death's bed. They were in a hospital. They were in intensive care. They had 17 medications they were on, congestive heart failure they had. They had prostate cancer advanced. They were 120 pounds overweight. I'm ready to change. 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay. So I gave them a protocol, and they lost 100 pounds. They got off all but two medications, and then they went right back on the next year, went right back on the old same, I got to save the world, looking for people who needed to be saved. That was this person's modus operandi, so they don't have to pay attention to their own life. And did that person call just about 3 months ago from an intensive care where he was supposed to die that night because he had end-stage congestive heart failure, and they were going to move him into critical care, and from there it was over? Same. Well, I'm ready to change now. You've said this twice before. Why now? What makes now any more important except now you realize all your games, all of these stupid little efforts you make to triangulate everything and is responsible except you. So I helped him one more time. I'm not helping him again. And we were talking about who's not going to make it this year. And a lot of Americans won't make it because they're not willing to change. And that's unfortunate. I wished I could be more politically correct and say, everybody's going to make it. We're all going to get into the boat. Everyone's, no. 90% of people are not going to give a damn about anything except today and live these self-preoccupied, self-absorbed, self-selfish lives of indifference. It wouldn't matter if they were on the side of a volcano and it was beginning to erupt. They'd give an excuse why they shouldn't hurry. There's a reality television show on. They got to watch this opening season of Kardashians, where they're having for the first time rectal births. Big ratings, I'm sure.
Wow,
Kenny, nice having you with us. Now I can hear you.
You can hear me better now.
Tell us your story of what you had, where you were at in your disease process, and what changed.
Well, Gary, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I got the spinal tap, MRIs, and it came back 100%. I was end-stage multiple sclerosis. If you remember, at the health support group that I attended in New York City years ago, I couldn't make it up the stairs without assistance. I had severe brain fog. I had severe vertigo. One of the sensations that I had is I felt a deep pressure, a heavy pressure on the back of my neck and the back of my head, almost as if someone was forcibly pushing me forward, but, you know, there's no one there, but that's the sensation that you have. Along with balance issues like many people with MS have, I experienced as well. And it was not easy. And the doctor, the neurologist prescribed a drug for me, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to go down this road because I read a lot of books on it, and really it's just a death sentence. They said, here you go, you could take these drugs just to make things more comfortable for you while, you know, you suffer or not suffer, you know, as you continue. And I decided not to do that. I said, you know what, I'm going to be empowered. And I went to your support group, and I followed every detail. I did not skimp. I didn't cheat. Every little piece. I said, okay, I'm going to do better. I'm going to heal myself. So once I found out everything that I had to do, I didn't want to take the road like a lot of people take. Some people just have to do one piece at a time. Because I didn't want to do that, I want to heal now. Like a maniac, I said, okay, I'm just going to flip everything like a switch. I give myself a week of debauchery with my poor diet and habits. And then after that, like a switch, whatever wasn't part of the protocol, either threw out or gave away or what have you. And, geez, Gary, I used to smoke cigarettes a long time ago. And I remember when I quit, I'd had such a withdrawal. I'd had no idea that I'd have the kind of withdrawal from food and, you know, poor diet and whatnot. But that lasted about a week. And then after that week was over, I just kept everything going with the green stuff and red stuff and the vitamins and exercise and meditating. That 10 years down the road, here I am, vibrantly healthy and ready to take on the world and share the good news that, hey, you know what, I don't have to be the only one. Other people can do it too.
Okay, Kenny, I'm going to ask you to give some short answers to the following questions, all right?
Okay, I'll be brief.
So I just found out what everyone else, you and I have not spoken, Kenny, so it was good to hear these things happening. Now, short answer, did we actually come down and help carry you up the steps to the health support groups for 16 months?
Yes.
All right. Short answer also, all these are short answers. Did you and your wife feel that from the very first meeting, you wouldn't be able to do the protocol because you weren't physically, immensely capable, so you're about to leave?
Correct.
Okay. in that same protocol, did you see a woman with such advanced Alzheimer's disease that she hadn't even changed out of a pair of clothes for 6 months?
Absolutely.
And couldn't hold her head up and was drooling and couldn't remember her name. Did you see what she was like 16 months later?
I did.
And what was it?
It was a miraculous change. A woman had Alzheimer's, and you're right. She couldn't do anything for herself, and she went from not being able to do anything and needing assistance with every physical ability that a person needs to have to, you know, live independently, to taking advanced computer classes and, you know, living vibrantly as well.
Okay, so she regained her life.
Yes.
All right. Did you see a woman with end-stage myasthenia gravis? She had a tall
might have.
He's like 6'6", 6'7".
Okay, I know who you're
talking
about.
She had been a ballerina?
Yes.
All right. Where today she's vibrantly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 10 years past that point where she should have died. Do you remember a man, an African-American gentleman, 70 years old, named, no, I won't give his name. I'll just give his first name, Thomas, who
yes.
was shaking like a leaf, and 16 months later, hands steady as a rock, but he also developed acute memory. He could remember the first and last names of everyone from his high school class 50 years before.
Yes, I do recall that. I recall the man with Parkinson's as well.
Yep, advanced Parkinson's also. There were 26 people who attended. There were 16 who continued to stick with the protocol. All 16 ended up with substantial recovery, and 3 completely reversed their condition. Can you be diagnosed today with any symptoms or signs or blood chemistry or neurological test to determine you have any multiple sclerosis in you at all?
I could not.
So you're completely cured?
I am completely cured, Gary.
And it's 10 years post, so it's not like a placebo effect, which
no.
is temporary. Okay. All right. And what was the single most important thing from your perspective that it required for you to keep on that journey?
A purpose. You need to have a purpose for yourself to do it, because without that, you need a reason. You need a really, really good reason that's going to be your motivating factor. Without that, forget it.
Wasn't it also said to everyone there that before you get a physical protocol, you have to have a spiritual protocol?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it.
Then how can
diet
you heal
is,
the
like
body?
You said before, diet is just one piece.
Yeah, how can you heal the body if it's physical symptoms if you're not working on the emotional and the spiritual? That, everyone got that, and that's the people who stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the results. Have you seen other people with medically irreversible conditions reverse them also?
I have not.
No, in your normal life, I'm talking about in your normal everyday life with all the
yeah,
doctors.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. My normal everyday life, no, because
okay.
that's not the prevailing model.
All right.
What we're doing, what you've done in the support group is not the prevailing model.
And you have regrown new myelin sheath in your spinal column.
I have.
Okay. Are you physically active today?
I am right now as we speak.
Good. All right, Kenny, you're coming down to visit us in April?
I am.
Great. We look forward to it.
Just let me know what week you feel I'd be the most helpful, and I'll be down that week.
Second and third week, we're going to be there. We look forward to seeing you.
Excellent. Thank you, Gary. Happy New Year again.
We're inviting in 10 people over the past 20 years who've reversed medically irreversible conditions to all be there, because I'm also bringing in some physicians, orthodox, not alternative, orthodox, hard-nosed, and I'm going to ask them, okay, here's some people, do your evaluations, and you tell me how this happened. I want to see if they can understand real healing. So it'll be not mechanistic healing. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Kenny, we'll see you in April. Luann, for the people who may not be aware of it, very quickly, you came to retreat down in Texas, the Healing Springs Ranch, back in 1992?
It was actually 1995. I had seen you at an expo, and you said all the things at the expo that I felt, but that I was suppressed and not allowed to discuss in my profession as a nurse administrator in the New York City Medical Center. It finally hit home that I realized that all the time and the energy and the effort that I put in to trying to help people, didn't work. The results for cancer treatment, heart disease, diabetes, autoimmune illnesses, infectious diseases, all of these were useless. All these treatments I never saw people get well. And then I became sick myself. I had hepatitis B, herpes 1, 2, and 6, Epstein-Barr virus, so I had to drink 13 cups of coffee a day. I was exhausted all the time, and yet I was in a very high responsibility, high energy job where I had to be on all day. So I was overseeing over 100 staff members in the hospital, and I was very involved with the high pace of the New York City Medical Center. And I felt with all this responsibility that I could do it. And I was chronically ill. I had chronic upper respiratory infections. And like I said, I needed sugar and I needed caffeine to keep me awake. And that was the perfect storm for cancer, as well as, you know, the fact that I was just so very toxic. And when I heard you speak, I just felt compelled to go and experience this retreat. And what really impressed me, Gary, was the power of being able to sit and be quiet, to be silent, and to be with nature and animals and birds. And you provided that for us. So subtle. And I would have never imagined that that would have such an impact on my ability to develop mental clarity again. Because after a while, you just, you know, you get up, you go to work, you come home on your day off, you go food shopping, you clean the house, and you get into this grind, and you get into this rut, and you fail, just like Kenny said, you fail to see the meaningfulness in what you're doing because you're getting a paycheck and you're getting benefits, but for what? And that retreat helped me to rethink, what the heck am I doing? Is this the kind of work I want to do the rest of my life? And now with a new diagnosis of having cancer, is this really how I want to spend my days? And it was that retreat, Gary, that it turned my life around. I created a whole new chapter in my life. I understood the real meaningfulness of not just taking good care of me because I'm worth it, but also to create challenges for myself that would help me be a better role model to help people help themselves.
But
and
you also
I became
a
holistic
background.
Nurse, and
you
the rest is history.
You came from that background of orthodox medicine, so I remember every night for a year after you'd worked all day as a hospital administrator, nurse administrator, you would come into the Tri-State Healing Center down 72nd and Broadway and sit with patients and read medical articles on the therapies that were being given where we were reversing these people's diseases, mainly at that time AIDS, 1,200 people with AIDS we were helping on protocols, and you were seeing people who had pneumocystis, crini pneumonia, cured, all their HIV positive, HIV negative, and it took a year before you were finally convinced that this was real, not hocus pocus. Then you made your transformation.
Well, coming from conventional medicine, I was very naturally skeptical. And I'm good with people being skeptical. That means they're going to do their due diligence. That means they're going to do their homework. And I wanted to go and experience. I wanted to see what you were doing. Because you hear all these amazing stories, and some of the patients agreed to have me review their medical records. I was stunned to see the seroconversion of disease right there in the medical record. And amazingly enough, I became one of those statistics. I engaged in those therapies. I terminated my position at the hospital. It took a lot of courage, but I was so determined to get well. And I realized how toxic I was. And I deconstructed everything that created the toxicity. I supercharged the immune system because that's what was going on around me. People were reconnecting to who the heck they were and what they're doing on this planet. They realized why they developed the chronic diseases they developed. And they were empowered by it instead of being disempowered, which is what we do in conventional medicine. We disempower you by putting the fear of God in you and saying, if you don't do what we're going to do, we're going to tell you to do, you're going to die. And it's a horrible way for people to live because, unfortunately, people are more motivated by fear than motivated by the prospect that they could be more of who they are now. And that's what happens at retreat. When people pull back and get that mental clarity, whoa, they begin to have the courage to go out there and change whatever it is they need to change in their life to make themselves stronger, more resilient, clearer, and everything changes. And it's, I mean, I've been seeing now for the past over 20 years, I've been watching people and helping people to realize their true potential. And it starts with starting a new chapter and being clear about it and learning to have the self-discipline to stick with it. And that's really what we concentrate on. Yeah, it's been nothing short of amazing for me, Gary, these last 20 years, witnessing people reverse cancers, end-stage cancers, stage 4 cancers from hospice, people reversing autoimmune.
Let me interrupt you. The gentleman who came down with stage 4 cancer, have you been in touch with him?
I have. He's doing very, very well.
And
this is the gentleman who lost his voice because the cancer was spreading all the way up into the main stem bronchus and into his larynx. And he was walking with a cane. He was on morphine. He had to bring his sister with him because, you know, he needed someone to care for him. And after 1 week, he was already walking without a cane. His voice was coming back. And by the end of 3 weeks, this guy was power walking with us every morning. He felt great. His voice is back 100%. His voice, when I say his voice, he's found his voice. And he's off all the morphine, and he's doing terrific.
Well, he's been back, I'm assuming, to get an additional exam to see the status of his cancer.
Yes, all of his tumors are shrinking in his lungs.
They're all shrinking.
Yes.
So why don't you invite him on and let him tell us what stage he went from, in stage 4 near death, a couple weeks to die, and that's 2 months ago. Where's he at now?
I'll find out where they're staging him at.
Yeah, and then ask him to come on. I'd like for him to tell the audience his story.
I will certainly do that.
All right. And by the way, I've got to go here in a moment, but we just want to let people know that we're doing a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI, that's going through a lot of challenges right now. Man, you talk about terminally on life support and fighting, right? They want to live, and we're here to help them. We're going to do one final retreat the second or third week of April, and it's a way off, yes, but we wanted people to be able to get their reservations in advance. That way they can, we're going to be full. It'll be packed. And then you can see all the wonderful things that are possible when you come with a good open mind, a positive disposition. We will find the agent provocateurs or the angry negative people who shouldn't be there, and we will get them out before the first day. So everyone will have an uninterrupted, unobscured view of their authentic and full potential self. My goal is to get people to be outstanding in every part of their life, happiness, healing, and this is what can happen. So, Luann, give people your number if they'd like to join us in that, and I don't intend to do any more down there. That's not, we're coming to the end of these because I got so many other things I want to do with some intentional communities. And also, we're opening up, I finally got it 100% complete, the Veterans Village. It's now 100%, and to get homeless vets a place to come and rebalance themselves emotionally, spiritually, and physically before they go back home, and at no cost to them. I'm paying for it all. But I first had to build the facility. It's all built. It's done. It's 100%. And we'll be reaching out to vet groups later this year to help them. Now I'm ready to start on that other thing, which is the intentional community for people who want to do things positive around other positive people in the future in safe and healthy and sustainable environments. But for now, this may be our last roundup out there for retreats. So give out the number, Luann, for those people who would like to come and have a wonderful experience.
Surely. It's 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. And just to reinforce, we will not be discussing rectal birth, not at all.
Why not?
There's going to be someone who asks me.
Yeah.
You know there is.
Yeah. All right, well, Kenny's going to be there, and in fact, we're inviting 10 people who are completely well, who were at death's door, and without any medical intervention, and to show what is possible. And I thought it would be nice if those people were to hold a workshop about their own journeys and how that might motivate other people in their journey. And also, people are completely well. It's good to be there, knowing that you can get even healthier and what you can do. Okay, thank you, Luann.
Okay.
And again, this is as a fundraiser to help our sister station, WBAI. And I'll be helping him do other things in the upcoming year, including film premiere, a lecture, and this. But this, if we fill it up, we'll buy about, I guess, between 2,000 to 3,000 premiums that can get out to the audience immediately and does not burden the station. They get the money and pay their bills, and we go out and do the work and pay those premiums. Now, I'm looking at the clock. I do not have enough time for questions from the audience. I don't want to cut them short, and Elizabeth is, and by the way, anyone who wants to write a comment or question can. You can go to prnstudio@gmail.com. Let's end today's program with a clip. And this clip, I don't want to do the animal one, that takes a little time, but boy, that's powerful. Wow. Let's do Abby Martin talking about, is Rachel Maddow dangerous to journalism on the Jimmy Dore show?
Do you think that MSNBC, I used to think they were the mirror image of Fox. I mean, I used to think that was not true. People would say that, but I think it is kind of true now. What do you think?
Yes, and I just saw them calling Bill Binney a conspiracy theorist. This is the Thin Thread program that was taken as the blanket dragnet surveillance program in the Bush administration. James Risen has hailed him. Edward Snowden has hailed him as the person who came before him. So it is enormously offensive to see a 30-year veteran of the NSA be dismissed and cast aside as a conspiracy theorist for simply bucking the Russia narrative. Like, this guy knows what he's talking about. He built, like, what you guys are using to spy on everyone right now. So it sickens me. And this is on top of just every day, all day, the Joy Reads and the Rachel Maddows, and it's just Russia, Russia, Russia. I don't know how much you can possibly manufacture about Russia, like just piling on and on and on. And the Russia stuff is so insane, too, because when you look at, like, today, for example, RT was forced to register as a foreign agent. They are doing everything in their power to make it just impossible to operate as a network.
Right.
But just to see MSNBC just pile on, it isn't surprising, but it just never ceases to amaze me. I mean, I watch it. I watch CNN and MSNBC and Fox daily just to see how insane they are. But I agree. It is the antithesis of Fox News. I mean, not the antithesis. It's like literally just the other arm.
Yeah.
Because so
they're the propaganda wing of the Democratic Party. There's no doubt about it. I didn't used to think that, but it definitely is true. Do you think? And I watch Fox News, and every time they attack Trump on Russia, it helps him. If you attack Trump on the real issues, meaning the health care, people's wages, ending the wars, all that stuff, it hurts him.
Well, there you go. We already know the Democratic Party doesn't care about that. Like, I just got a robocall today from someone who's like, this person is endorsed by the Democrats. I was like, do they support single-payer health care? Mm-hmm. And do they support ending militarism? Because if they don't, I don't give up. The Democrats endorse this person.
Do you think that Rachel Maddow is actually gone from being just doing bad journalism to actually being dangerously spreading propaganda?
I think that Rachel Maddow and other people like her know that it's almost like they're careerists and they're careerist hacks, but they know that they need to keep doubling down on excusing why Democrats are losing support and lost, essentially. I mean, it's all part of the same machine, right? They're all cogs in this big Democratic establishment. So I think people like Hillary, it's still part of that same psychosis that they haven't accepted fault and they don't understand. They're so far removed in their elitist bubbles that they have no idea what the entire country is feeling and thinking. It's really unfortunate. I mean, you just point to the example that Hillary Clinton didn't even bother to go to, like, what was it, Wisconsin?
Wisconsin.
Didn't even bother.
Right.
Did Putin do that, or did Putin cancel the plane ticket? Or
yes, Putin, he wiped off Wisconsin on her map. He had a guy come in there with an eraser, and she's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Russia did it.
Russia did it.
So let me ask you, what do you think the future of journalism? Are you optimistic about it? I'm certainly not. But what do you think what do you see it evolving? I mean, it's like, in retrospect, honestly, it's always been pretty horrible.
Right.
And I mean, on the big issues like war. Mm-hmm. Right. So what do you think going forward? What is your prognosis for journalism as a whole?
Well, it's difficult because it's journalism is antithetical to business. Right. So that's why journalism got corrupted in the first place, is it became just another corporate entity and consolidated into just like a construction of the U.S. government and just essentially stenography from these lackeys in the Beltway. I think that it's dead, and it has been dead for a while because of the corporate consolidation, because of the fact that businesses don't meld well. I mean, we just saw what Gothamist shut down because of the unionization, or attempt to, rather, of the employees. That's why I was at RT, Jimmy. I knew this 10 years ago. When the Iraq war was happening, I first thought that it was all the Bush administration. I did a swing state trip for John Kerry. Wow, that was an experience. That was fun. So I was still sucked into the two-party paradigm until I just kind of realized, hey, why is the media selling us this?
And that is Rachel, excuse me, that is Abby Martin on the Jimmy Dore Show. Just for some additional perspective about how few people you can believe, because that's where they get their paychecks. That's where they have their ideological and political connections. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.